Item B, 2019-21 budget follow-up and decision. I assume Nate, the ball's in your court.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair. Going to be in the role to David Giglio, who will lead this conversation this morning.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the Commission. I hope you all have the presentation in front of you. There's a lot of numbers on there. It'll make this easier. On page two, we have the outline. What we're going to cover today is the key decision points as we understand them. Remind you all of the decisions you've made already about our request legislation. Talk a little bit about a caveat around about bill revenue flexibility, and then dive into the heart of this, the license fee revenue options. We'll describe in detail the customer impacts. We'll also bring up the rear with the Chinook license plate and some information that was requested there, and wrap it up, making sure we have decisions on all of these items. On page three, we outline the key decision points. Based on the conversations I've heard, the first question that I hear is, how much revenue do we want to generate from our recreational license holders from the licensor fee increases as compared to a request from the state general fund? The second question is, what approach, given those sideboards of a revenue target, what approach to license fee increases sets an appropriate balance across our customers? And those two decision points aren't necessarily sequential, because you might feel more comfortable with the fee increase depending upon the approach. So there is a little bit of iteration there, but we will try to take them sequentially as much as we can. Four describes the decisions that we made on the commission meeting on the 9th and the 10th. We approved the long-term funding plan. Notably, that included the notion that most of our funding will come from broad-based sources, such as general fund state, and license fees will be a supplement to that. In total, that was a $59 million performance level request. Almost $52 million of that was from the state general fund. $2.8 million was generated by agency request legislation that you approved that day. Most of that comes from the Columbia River Steelhead and Salmon endorsement. Some from administrative penalty, and then there were some losses associated with our bills that would improve recruitment and complying with the American Disabilities Act. Lastly, on that day, we approved a 5% fee increase that would generate about $5 million, or 8% of the total budget ask. We also decided to move the Natchez Hatchery from the cut list to the at-risk list. And we did not approve the elimination of the 2 and 3 day temp licenses, and we did not approve increasing the cost of your second or third catch record card. On slide five, we talk about how on the August 17th meeting, the commission discussed the feedback that the Budget and Policy Advisory Group and OFM provided, some of their concerns around a lower fee increase and how that balance of wildlife account versus general fund affects the optics and perhaps the viability of our fee request and overall request. You requested additional options and analysis to support these ideas about a license fee increase and the balance between state general fund and fee revenue. And in particular, you wanted to see the increase endorsement approach in combination. How would those things affect the customer? What I've taken away is that part of our goal here is to avoid sticker shock, is to avoid turning off our best customers, the ones who are really dedicated to hunting and fishing with a big dollar price increase, and to also not discourage the new customers, people who might be just starting. So there was a real concern that I heard about keeping the increases as low as possible to retain customers while raising needed revenue. So on page six, I've got the first thing labeled as a decision. We've been operating and generating this analysis based on what I've heard, which is we want to explore up to a $15 million increase in license fee revenue, representing about 25% of the total ask. And that would mean that today's concerns would be the balance of $12.2 million, because we already have $2.8 million net from the previously approved legislative proposals made on the 10th. So I want to just take a moment to confirm with this group, is there anyone out there, and do any of you think that this is wrong, that I've stated this wrong, that we're not exploring up to a $15 million increase in license fee revenue?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I don't think it's wrong to explore this. I obviously was not on the call last Friday when this first came up. When we get done with this presentation, I'd like to offer a few comments about the rationale that was put on the table. When I prepared for this meeting, I listened to the tape, and I didn't hear too much about that, and I'm not sure whether or not when you talk to the OMB folks, for example, that you presented the commission's rationale for the decision that was made. But I guess I understand that the purpose of this meeting is to explore the possibility of, rescinding or amending a previously adopted motion. So for the purpose of discussion here, I don't have any objection to it. But as I go through this, I hope that what we're hearing from the staff here is a presentation of options made in a neutral manner.
That's correct, Commissioner. So moving on to slide 7, this is just a quick note of caution. Just to sum it up really quickly, if we have a conservation endorsement, nice thing about that is that revenue is very, very flexible. And across the board, fee increase in contrast is only about 77% really, really flexible. Some accounts like Warm Water Game Fish and Tupole, they're dedicated accounts, but we can really plug them into our budget request to improve fishing very easily. Some of these other accounts would require a little bit of work behind the scenes to make them fit. Probably not a big deal. I just want to throw it out there that it is something we need to pay attention to and we'll need to work through. And then lastly, some of these revenue proposals you see actually exceed the $12.2 million target. And part of that is because we haven't modeled a margin of error for buyer resistance. So we don't know how many people will be put off by the fee increase. So some of these numbers are higher than the target to give us some room to work through the proposals. So slide 8 starts talking about the fee increases. Concept 1A, the across the board, this is what was presented to you on August 9th. The pro is that everyone's treated the same, and of course the con is, well, everyone's treated the same on a percentage basis, and that really adds up to a large dollar value for people who buy all of our hunting and fishing licenses. So we had, I heard concern on the August 9th discussion about that, and so we developed concept 1B, which is the same across the board options with caps on our bundled package licenses. So for instance, on Fish Washington, regardless of what 15% is, it would be, in this case, we would be saying a 7% increase to that bundled license. There's still the transaction fee increase that would go up with it. One of the things we'll need to do at the end of this call is be clear about whether we're talking about out-the-door prices and customer prices. Just as a note, these numbers here in the spreadsheet was built looking at the math was a little easier on our end to talk about it from a license perspective, but I think going forward after today, we need to turn it around and only speak in terms of out-the-door prices. But just for the record, when we say $15 hunting cap, that would be a $16.50 increase once you include that transaction fee. So what's important to note here is that the revenue doesn't tail off that much. It takes a big chunk off of the hardest hit folks. They see savings of several dollars. But the net revenue increase at 15% drops only $500,000. So the nice thing about this is that it's equitable. Everyone's paying up, but there is that cap. So that our customers who are spending the most won't have that same sticker shock experience that I think we're concerned about that drives them from out of hunting or fishing in Washington. One of the cons is that we would need to do bundling of our hunting licenses. We would have until September of next year to get those in place before the new licenses go into effect so we can make those discounts concurrent with the fee increases. And of course, the whole logic of this It's very simple on the statutory side. It's a straight across the board 15% increase or whatever percent you choose. But then the follow-up work is in the commission's hands using our existing authority to create discounts for bundles. So that's our way of protecting people who are buying a lot of our products. And I think for clarity, we may want to include in the statute itself direction for the commission to look at certain specific bundles and implement discounts so that it's clear to everyone. And in the fiscal note, it's clear what the impacts are. So are there any technical questions? We'll get to the policy questions in a couple of slides. Any technical questions about the math or the mechanics of concept 1B, fee increase with a cap?
Question? Commissioner McIsaac? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Two questions, actually. The first one on what did you presume, or how often does the $7 fishing cap and the $15 hunting cap come into play when you made your calculations? Did you just take a look at last year's license profiles and presume everybody would do the same thing again, and that how often these caps would come into play? And then the second question has to do with this bundling concept, which reminds me of TV bills and phone bills. And I'm not sure what you actually mean by bundling.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. In answer to your first question, yes, that's exactly how we did the modeling. We looked at existing revenue or existing license sales. And then in terms of bundling, Nate, you know the licenses better than I do. So I guess I'd like to hint. The core concept is we want to offer discounts. We have the ability to offer discounts when people buy licenses bundled together. We do it for the combination fishing license today. We do it for Fish Washington. We do it for the bear, deer, elk
lots of examples
combo. And this would be simply ramping that up and adding some new packages that would help the hunters bundle more things together so that we could protect them and give them more of a discount and keep their licenses from going up too much under this across-the-board scenario. Nate, did I get that right?
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, Nate Pamplin. Yeah, David, you did. I think probably just a couple other items to probably add is we currently have authority to bundle licenses. In the fee bill, or excuse me, in the rec recruitment bill, we were looking at having that be more explicit. Right now, it's kind of buried in a fishing license statute. So we'd like to bring that up and have it kind of a standalone statute, as well as have the authority for the director to be able to offer kind of promotional discounts. For instance, it's the last couple weeks of May, and you know there's a sale on turkey tags or stuff like that. So that's in one of the bills that was approved last year and again this year. As far as the cap goes, I think it's important to recognize that the way we would go about implementing this cap would be bought it at the first time of buying their bundle. If they're buying additional products, or if someone that buys a hunting license and comes back and buys another hunting license, it would be incredibly challenging to track what total is above their 2011 prices to see that if they're north of $15 or not. And so I think what we're trying to do is try to offer some bundled discounts for the most popular types of purchases, the big four with small game, the big four, a small game with the turkey tag, et cetera. We come up with a couple, three different bundles and put those into statute. So as David indicated, they would show up in the fiscal note. Going forward, if the hunter then bought additional special permit applications or multi-season applications or raffle tags or entries, they would be exceeding the $15 cap because the whatever the percentage is applied to each product would rack up above that cap. So I just wanted to make sure folks were clear about it's not a universal cap. It would be trying to be a cap on
a corollary of that would be that we would want to really market this. As it now stands, our Fish Washington and our combo license discount is relatively minor on a cash basis. Under this proposal, those discounts would go up quite a bit. So the value of buying more goes up. The discount goes up. And so that, I think that gives us something to one, make sure people are aware of so that they don't buy a la carte and spend more than they need to, but it also gives us the upselling opportunity to help people take advantage of more opportunities. But we would need to market it. A couple other comments about this, the $7 and $15, those were numbers we picked. They're not necessarily the right numbers. We can play with those numbers. We've got people with a spreadsheet standing by to help answer questions about what would it look like if you dropped that hunting cap down. To keep the hunting cap down around 10% to be similar to that $7 amount for fishing on Fish Washington, $12 might be the right figure there. And again, we don't lose a ton of revenue by doing that. So I just want to throw that out there because as I've sat with these numbers over the weekend, I'm kind of thinking that $15 could even go down. But yeah, I want to make sure you knew that this is a model that we can adjust the percentage, we can adjust the hard caps if you have questions about those. But those are probably better saved for the policy discussion than the technical conversation right now. Were there any other questions about the math on this proposal? Okay, so I'll move on then to the next options. We're on page 9 now. Concept 2 is the phased in across the board. I think, can't remember if you've seen this before, we have two columns there, the first one showing an 8% increase in the first fiscal year and a 15% net increase in the second fiscal year, the second column showing 10% the first year and an additional 5% that second year. And you can see there they generate revenue on a sustainable basis. It generates more than enough revenue, about $14 million a year, or biennium rather, but there is a shortfall in that first fiscal year. That would simply increase the general fund ask on a one-time basis. So this is similar to concept one. It phases in the increase, so there's less sticker shock on any one given year. However, the net increase to someone who buys all our hunting fishing licenses is still about $50. So that's the con of concept two. Concept three, we talked about a conservation endorsement. We've given you three models here, a $5 resident with a $2 temp, $10 non-resident, $8 resident, and $10 resident. You can see what kind of revenue they generate. $8 resident would be enough to really meet the needs of the current lift we're looking for. Pro of this, simple messaging. It protects the pocketbooks of our most dedicated customers, but on the flip side, has a very large percentage increase on person who buys just a freshwater fishing or just a clamming or one of our smaller licenses. So it's a potential barrier to entry. And the other question, of course, is what are we selling? What do you get with this endorsement? And we still don't have a great answer there, but it's something that we're talking about, we want to work on, we want to develop that type of a package in the future. So are there any technical questions about options or concepts two or three, the phased in across the board or the endorsement? Okay, I'll keep moving then. So the recommended option is some version of concept 1B, an across-the-board percentage increase with hard caps on those bundled fishing hunting licenses. That would apply to residents only. Non-residents would bear the brunt of the full percentage increase. And again, those $7 and $15 figures, those are starting points we can adjust. And the 15% you can also adjust depending on how much balance between wildlife account and general fund you want in our budget submittal. The biennial total would be close to $14 million. All customers would contribute, but none in excess, trying to avoid having it be a barrier to entry when the fees go up. Certainly lessens the pocketbook on the most dedicated customers. And then there's simple messaging, that kind of a guarantee of if you're a dedicated customer, you won't pay more than X for your fishing license, you won't pay more than Y more for your hunting license. So that's the preferred option as we've thought through this because of the way it balances the impact and doesn't hit anyone too hard. Concept 2 on page 11. This is the phased approach at 8% and 15%. Mathematically, it works fine. It just has that big impact on our best, on our the customers who use the most of our services. That $50 a year is still hanging out there for them after 2 years. Concept 3 generates the money just fine, but it might discourage new buyers, new participants, or the people who buy just a small license because it's a pretty big lift to them. And then blending Concept 1 and 3 with a $5 resident endorsement and a 5% across-the-board increase, that also works mathematically, but it kind of mixes the downsides of having a fairly large impact to our high spenders and a fairly large impact to our low spenders. Pages 12 and 13 describe the concepts, with, or show the concepts with numbers. Fishing on page 12, you can see that, well, you can see the numbers. We show a trout angler. We show a Fish Washington customer. We show the increases on the left or in the center of the page on a dollar basis and on the right on a percentage basis. On the fishing side, what I notice here is that Concept 1B gives you the lowest percentage increase of the four options. It gives you the tied for lowest increase with a 14% increase on the trout angler and under 10% on the Fish Washington. Flipping over to the next page on page 13, and this is part of why the $15 cap looks a little high to me. You can see it's not quite the same dynamic because hunting licenses are more expensive. Here we show a turkey tag on the left and a hunting enthusiast who buys who buys the bundled Big Four plus special hunt, multi-season. We show the dollar effect, the dollar lift, the increase in the middle, and the percentage increase on the right. And here you see that you would get savings under the endorsements simply because hunting licenses are more expensive than fishing licenses. So at that point, page 14 is really asking for a decision and, I guess, first a discussion. What do you think? What works best for you? Our recommendation is some combination of a flat rate with caps, but I want to turn it over to the commission and take any questions you have on the policy side or let you discuss this as you wish.
Yeah, Larry, this is Brad.
Yeah. Chair Smith.
Before we get into the discussion, I just really want to thank the staff. This is you did exactly what we asked you to do last week, and you did it very well in a very short period of time. So thanks for giving us the information that we needed to make a good decision. Appreciate it.
Hey, I second that.
You're certainly welcome. That's what we're here for.
Commissioner Carpenter, I'll start if I could.
Commissioner Thurman, please.
I am certainly supportive of the staff recommendation with the presentation that we've been given. We decided to return to this following input from both BPAG and what we heard via staff from OFM and the governor's office. It was sort of, in my case, kind of buyer's remorse, a realization that, we're not going to be the only department in these good economic times asking for general funds. And to traditionally be a department that has depended heavily on fee revenue in the past, and then to go in and suddenly say, hey, we have this huge budget hole, and we want to make it up with pretty much completely with general funds, hey, support us in this, I think is really unrealistic. We do need to ask our traditional stakeholders who have not seen a fee raise since 2011 to do their kind of traditional part I really appreciate that the option 1B that the staff is recommending deals with what our queasiness was, which is we're getting pushback on that, and we saw what happened in 2017, and don't want to face the same thing. That said, our budget and policy advisory group worked really hard on this for a number of months, and they're very committed and have promised us that they're going to help with their constituents to support this effort through the legislative session and before. So as I said, really think that the option that staff is recommending, maybe with some tweaks, is a much secure way to go to the legislature and try to overcome this big budget hole that we're facing. And then one other thing that I want to add, I'm pleased to hear that staff is committed to continue to work on the conservation endorsement idea. I do agree that there's a lot of thinking through maybe working with partner agencies on such a concept, but I'm very intrigued by it, in particular the possibility that it could be a voluntary option for our non-traditional customers to contribute to department revenue.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. And let me also thank the staff for a very thorough presentation here. In preparing for this thing, like I said, I listened to the tape, and I thought it might be useful again to think about the rationale for the adopted position that we took back on the August meeting, and maybe also offer a couple of observations. You know, going into this discussion, after reading this stuff, I was not inclined to support any motion to rescind or amend, but I am interested in hearing from other commissioners before deciding and could support such a motion. And I'll bring up just a couple of the points that Commissioner Thorburn brought up in a moment. But first of all, just again to get into some of the background here, because I wasn't there at the last conference call. I did take the chance to read the Budget and Policy Advisory Group letter, and I applaud their attitude, and I agree with almost everything they state in the letter. And I did have the opportunity to talk to Mr. Friedman, who is seems to be in the lead on that group. But their letter did not seem to address the reasons that the motion passed on August 10th. And I think in talking to them, it was because they did not get briefed on what that rationale was. But looking at their letter, which I've got in front of me, again, I agree with what they say. The header here, the department is efficient, comparing well with wildlife agencies in other states. Absolutely. They've got a header about the department's mission, reflecting the public interest served in its, but its budget does not. I absolutely agree with that. And in there, they say, we call on the legislature to improve the balance between the revenue sources. That's very important in terms of our rationale on August 10th, and that is how much should be paid by traditional license holders and how much should be paid for by the general fund. And the BPAG letter raises that as something that should change. Their letter talks about the department confronting extraordinary challenges that warrant support. Again, I absolutely agree. Failure harms not just the agency, but also the state. Absolutely. It's at the end of their letter when they say our belief that as an appropriate breakdown is a 25% some sort of critical threshold that needs to be conformed to, or all of this business is not. It has a high risk of failing, and that's the part I'd like to hear a little bit more about as to why that was. But, you know, when we moved in favor of this on August 10th, And that was the policy question at that time again. How much license money and how much general fund? And the motion was for 5% and the COLA authority to the commission. And the three reasons for 5% at that time was that the consensus was that the department should be getting more general fund money and a higher proportion of general fund money than currently received. The funding plan that we put out makes this very statement. I think it's our second recommendation, maybe the first even gets into it, changing this formula so that there's more, a higher proportion of general fund money. And we don't ask for it, you know, then we're not really going to get it. I had the opportunity to be in a hunter's education class less than a week ago, and the average age of the kid in there was very young compared to me. And the instructor got up and said to the kids, you all ought to be proud of paying your license fee because those other folks are not paying their share. And those other folks he was talking about were wildlife watchers. And while I could argue they do pay sales tax, they do pay something, I think that's a common thought out there amongst a lot of people, and that's why people are advocating for more general fund, higher proportion general fund. You know, the staff presentation in August had this 350% return on investment. It had $1.5 billion in the state of Washington for wildlife watching. And if that economic estimate was taxed at 8% of a sales tax, that's $120 million, which is more money than we even get. So that segment alone, again, supports this argument that the general fund ought to be paying more. You know, all the commercial fisheries goes into the general fund, those taxes and licenses, I think that's true. The fish in the grocery stores, I'm not sure how much income gets to that through the wholesale process, but fish in restaurants, all that goes into the general fund. You all know the rationale. So more balance is what the BPAG was calling for, and that was one of the three rationale points that I recall from August 10th. Another concern out there was that the public wouldn't like a significant increase. And so in August 10th, there was some discussion about this backlash effect. And we heard that Oregon is actually considering reducing their license fees. And while the staff has not put a factor in there to estimate buyer resistance, and I do not fault them for not being speculative on this, but the calculations don't have it. And now in this presentation, we see there's some bump above the numbers to come up with some sort of a buffer. But the concern on August 10th was that there could be a backlash. There could be some net reduction. And the less the license fees, the less the DJ money, the less the Pittman-Robertson money. And I think that was a concern expressed, and I think it's still out there because we don't really know. You know, some of our clientele don't really care about the price. They don't even know what the price is if you ask them, and they'd pay virtually any price. But that demographic is the older folks, the wealthier folks. But, you know, there's some other folks out there that are raising kids, paying for school clothes, soccer, home mortgages, and, you know, some of them just won't do it. And on a recent week-long fishing trip, I actually ran into some folks who wanted to go fishing with me who didn't have a fishing license. And I said, well, why don't you go get one? And they said, well, we can't afford that. And I said, well, go get a one-day license then. And they did, and they got to go fishing. But it's not an easy thing for a lot of people to cough up even the existing license fee. So, and when you go higher, you go 5%, 8%, 10%, 15%, 23% was the last time around, I guess, people start asking, what exactly am I getting for my money? And is hunting getting better? Is fishing getting better? And if you get more of those questions, the higher the price goes. And at that time, Jay Caney also brought up this unfair cost of multiple tags, impacts on families with lots of license holders, and the staff did a nice job at analyzing an option that you guys came up with last week. The last point of rationale that we talked about on August 10th was the economic climate for asking for more general fund, a higher proportion of general fund. And the revenue forecasts are up. That February of 2018 forecast was very strong, $1.3 billion over the next several years. The June forecast noted that the revenue forecast, the revenue collections, not the forecast, but the actual collections since February came in $189 million greater than the February forecast, which was high. So we're not in a recession. You know, the legislature will be in decision mode on what to do with more money, and they could spend some of it on the department needs and proposals if we ask. If we don't ask, then they're not going to spend it on anything we don't ask for. But if there was a better economic climate to ask for more general fund, I'm not sure when that might be. I know there's a lot of obligations out there, and we spoke a little bit about that, but it's not a recession. We talked a little bit about in that economic realm, what might the legislator, individual legislator's reaction be, and does it need to be a magic 25%? Would 15% allow you to make the same arguments that the BPAG has made? I think it probably would. What if it's 23%? What if it's 20%? You know, so what is the right answer to this balance? You know, when I ask myself, do I really think legislators will not support anything that's under 25%, regardless of the arguments, then I get a little difficulty understanding why. And, you know, when the legislator asks their general rank and file non-connected traditional users and hears bellyaching, I think that plays into it. So, you know, and I think what happened in the last biennium, when the legislators said no to a fee increase and put in the proviso and all the rest of that, it was all very negative, and I think that's something to think about as well. So anyway, when I thought back about, well, why did we even go with 5%, there were some reasons. And we came up with this modest increase, but show some increase, don't go to zero, a simple increase. And so, you know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about why more enhances our chances of getting a higher, or getting it, period, getting what we asked for, and why asking for a higher proportion would not. You know, and if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. 5% does ask for a higher proportion of general fund money, and that's what's in our long-term funding plan, so, you know, why not start now? You know, and if you're concerned about buyer resistance or the supply and demand effect, going lower is better than going higher. The higher you go, the bigger the chance there is a buyer resistance, supply and demand effect. And so, again, I'm bouncing back to all that. That's all on the 5% thing. I don't know if there is going to be a motion to rescind or amend a previously adopted motion. But the big prize in that motion was the authority for the COLA, in my mind. And that was the other part that passed, an important part, and that would keep us out of this every 3 to 7 year cycle of having to fight some sort of a holy war just to get even on inflation. And so that's the biggest part of that, in my mind. Now, just a couple of things on Commissioner Thorburn's points. We're not the only ones asking. Yes, that's true. They all are going to be asking. I don't know what they're going to be asking for. They're going to probably be asking for more. If we get into that competition, we should have a chance at carrying our position based on the merits. If we stay out of that competition by going lower and lower and lower, we're not going to get anything we don't ask for. And so, you know, I think we've got all this advice to ask for a higher proportion. And again, I'm having trouble understanding why we wouldn't even ask. The staff's recommendation here, as I understand it, presumes the direction to go come up with some options for a 12.2 target. Was not a recommendation that what we did in August 10th was wrong. It was a wrong policy decision. And they're putting before us the policy decision. What is the right proportion? What is the right number? But if there was a target of 12.2 million, they've looked at all these things. They've got a recommendation that they think is the best one. But I don't think this ought to get confused unless I'm wrong, and I guess I'd ask the director to speak up if that's true, that the staff is recommending saying that the policy decision on August 10th was wrong, and they're recommending a different policy decision. So those are my perspectives.
Vice Chair, this is the director.
Yes, sir.
I'd quickly answer that last one. We are not recommending a different policy position. We will accept the policy position that you all decide. We were strictly looking at options. To simplify that, we said the option would be 12.2, just as Commissioner McIsaac said, and then provided options for achieving that. That's separate from a policy recommendation that you change your policy. If you change your policy, this is how we would recommend you do it for that dollar amount. You decide the policy, you decide the dollar amount.
Thank you, Director. Other comments from the commission?
Larry. Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, Brad.
Given the discussion that we had last week and the work that the staff put in going through this bit by bit, I would echo Commissioner Thornburn's support for the staff recommendation.
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Commissioner Graybill.
I also agree with Commissioner Thornburn after reading the letter from BPAG. And I was very much in favor of just a 5% increase. However, I think that this option 1B with the increase with a cap would have a lot of appeal and would be easily explained to the public. And I would like to see, as the presenter mentioned, maybe an option on hunting at 12 and fishing at 5, just to see what that impact would be. But I do feel that we should reconsider our decision from our last meeting and look at that option 1B is something I think I would be very much in favor with. And I also think that the ability for our non-traditional licensed buyers to have the ability to support the department is positive and should be explored further, but not brought forward at this time.
Larry, Commissioner Baker?
Okay, Commissioner Baker, I don't know who was the other one, but we'll get to you here in a minute, please.
This is Bob, but I'll defer to Barbara, and then I'll be up next.
Thank you, Commissioner Keogh. Barbara?
My opinion on this is that if we were the final decision maker, I would be very supportive of Commissioner McIsaac's proposal, but we're not. And I've also thought back about this and how to balance all the things that we are asking for. And my opinion is that I like 1B as well. I like 25% or less as a threshold. And in some ways, I think that the way I've always approached things is incrementally, and this sends us down that incremental pathway of rebalancing. But my problem with 1B is I still think 15% is too high. I think it makes a lot of sense for those who are going to have to carry this weight in the legislature to actually have a bill that there's a return on investment, and so that's more than 5. 15 seems a little high. I'd liked 12 ever since we started these conversations. And so if I make the motion, it'll be at 12%, which is a little less than, well, it's between $1 and $2 million more. On a $60 million ask, I just think that can be harmonized at the end. My reasons for that, I wish they were scientific and statistical. 12% sounds like a reasonable amount to ask for if we haven't raised fees since 2011. 15% starts to sound pretty darn high, and I'm just thinking about the people who will be considering this that isn't us. The other thing I wanted to say is about the conservation surcharge. I'm not sure what we're calling it. I think that is a terrific idea. And I'm serious about that. I think it's too soon to put it on the table and to try to get it into law. But what I would like to see us do is begin spending some of this extra money that I hope we get, investing in ourselves. And on this, I'm sort of modeling, I just read an article about BC. They have this is in the Globe and Mail, 2 days ago. BC has begun an ambitious effort to review the province's approach to managing wildlife with $14 million committed. They are doing the exact same thing that we're struggling with. I'll send this around this afternoon. But they're actually putting a little bit of money where their mouth is. And so I think we should put in our budget a proviso. Usually we don't proviso our own money, but we can. That tells us to look at the conservation surcharge, to work with our co-partners in conservation in the state. The big deal on the BC approach is that they're working with the tribes. And to come back, both the commission and the legislature, before next session with an approach that works. The Ruckels House thing kind of fizzled out with the Discover pass. We can't let that happen again. We need to get serious about this and really push it, and push it from our perspective. And so that's my, not 2 cents, maybe 10 cents worth on the issue. 12% conservation in our budget as a process to get back next year. Oh, but the one, all the bundling and all of that.
Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thanks. I'll be brief, and this call is going on. But I want to thank Don. He did raise some good points, and certainly all refreshed our recollection as to why we voted the way we did. But for me, I think the BPAG was a critical part of the process, engaging the public, and we did that. A lot of meetings, a lot of time, a lot of effort went into that. And I think it's wrong for us to kind of sweep their thoughts aside, particularly after our meeting and this letter. It comforts me, and I think I said this on the call, to know that many of our key stakeholders are on board with this, and they will help us in the legislature and justify for this increase. We can refer to the letter. Now, if it turns out within the legislature that that our fee increase is too steep, then I guess the obvious answer is okay, legislature, then we need more general fund dollars. I mean, I don't think any of us are necessarily too obsessed on where we come out at the end, but we are, it is important that we fund the agency to the extent that we think it's necessary. So I'm in favor of reconsidering our motion on the 5% component of our ask being from fees. I'm comfortable going up to 25%. But, as far as the details, as Commissioner Baker brought up, 12% versus 15%, it doesn't really, as she points out, it's kind of more of a perception. It doesn't really make that much difference in terms of additional revenue. So thanks. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think we should reconsider. I think we should move in the direction of the BPAG. I, too, applaud the department's or the staff's work on this, and I'm prepared to vote on a motion.
Would the commission be interested in some of the numbers that result from the scenarios you put on the table in this conversation?
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. So I can sense the mood of the commission here, and any of my reticence on this obviously is in the minority. I think it's important that the commission do this properly by Robert's Rules of Order. And so before getting into the debate of whether it be 12% or 15% or something or different variations of 1B, I think it's proper to get that on the table properly. and I've heard the word reconsider, motion to reconsider, which is only appropriate when you're in the middle of a meeting. And so a motion to rescind, repeal, or amend is really what everybody ought to be looking at. And that's because it protects against instability and variations in attendance, which frankly is what we've got here with people not attending now, and with Jay Caney and Jay Holzmiller not here. It's involved here. So in the spirit of moving forward with this, I guess I would make a motion to amend the motion adopted on August 10th. There were several of them, but I'm only going to amend the motion that dealt with the selection of 5%, the authority for COLA, and the administrative fee. And if there is a second and there is a vote on that, then that motion is up for amendment.
Second.
We have a Commissioner Thorburn seconds Commissioner McIsaac's motion. Any further discussion?
Just to speak to it again, doing this in the spirit of what I feel the will of the commission is here and where I might stand in this. And so I'd be moving in favor. And if this motion is adopted, then I'd be anxious to hear what motions there would be to amend that motion. And I think that is the motion of the several that were adopted in on August 10th that's for discussion.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. The motion and the second on the 5% stated by Commissioner McIsaac. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same? Okay, motion carries.
So, Commissioner Thorburn?
Commissioner Thorburn.
I will move to amend, and my motion, which I would like to speak to if there's a second, will be to have an across-the-board 15% increase to fees, fishing and hunting license permit fees with the $7 cap and for fishing licenses and $15 cap for hunting licenses. So that's my motion. If there's a second, as I said, I'll speak to it quickly.
Second. I have a motion to it.
Commissioner Grable.
Commissioner Grable, second. Further discussion.
I would be interested in hearing some of the adjusted figures that staff have been able to calculate during our discussion, based on some of the suggestions that have been provided.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Graybill mentioned a $5 fishing cap and $12 hunting cap. And again, these are on the bundles, not the out-the-door price. We would need to change it to be out-the-door. But that would get us to $13.2 million versus what we have here listed as $13.7. We actually realized that we didn't adjust the non-residents correctly, and it would be $14.0. So it's a loss of only $0.8 million to go to caps of 5 and 12. Commissioner Baker, you mentioned dropping it from 15% to 12%. Keeping those $5 and $12 caps at 12% across the board increase, the revenue lift becomes $11.1 million. And then just to try to maintain, just out of my own curiosity, was like, well, what is it like if you drop the hunting cap to $10, since fishing's at a nice $5, and that takes you down to $10.9 million from $11.1. And we have this on a spreadsheet. It is, if you want to throw more options out there, it takes no effort to answer your questions. And I'm happy to repeat any of those.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McKenzie.
With regard to the question of a 12% or a 15%, the motion is for 15%. So I guess a question to the maker of the motion. You heard the rationale for 12%. Why did you choose 15%, and why do you think that will make a difference?
Well, I actually support 15%. It gets us to where we want to be. I think that actually the 12% is a little bit lower, and I just think that it is more pragmatic and practical to say that department revenue, state revenue, is going to be 25% user fees. That's still a considerable, in response to some of the points you raised, Commissioner McIsaac, that's still a considerable decrease in proportion of state funding that comes from user fees with this ask. And secondly, Commissioner Baker kind of pointed out, this is not what, or the legislature is not the next step in this process. The governor's office is the next step. It's going to be the governor's budget. It's not going to be the department's budget that goes to the legislature. And the governor has to balance all of the executive departments in his budget. And that gets to the pragmatism of the request. They have to go through a very practical exercise that they're going to take forward to the legislature. And I think we have to be practical in what we're requesting to be strategic. I support 15%.
Commissioner Baker.
Commissioner Baker.
While the 12% isn't on the table right now, I'm asking for clarification on exactly what we are voting on. And what I want to, really all I want to know is that we're talking about the percentage and the bundling. We aren't changing our ability to raise fees, the other part of the that we voted on the 10th. That's my question. My point is that I don't even think that 15% gets us to 25% of our ask. And if we put this in context, we aren't just talking about this ask. We are going to spend the next 2 weeks talking about an issue which is going to dwarf all of this, my guess, on money. And so not only is this not our, if we got to choose, yeah, I'm right there with Don. But we've got to work this through several layers of government. Some of them are hostile to the idea of a fee at all. And we haven't even tackled yet a much bigger issue and how we're going to handle that. So I will not vote against this fee increase. But I've been pondering this. I'm not going to prolong the call by trying to amend Kim's motion and then getting into whether we're doing tertiary amendments and whether that's legal under Reed's rules. But I would ask us to pay attention to the context and I don't want to sound preachy, but we need to think as well about the big picture that we are getting ready to present to this legislature and our governor.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. This amounts to a new guy question. I don't know if it's for the director or for legal counsel, but the question about what's pragmatic and practical, Commissioner Thorburn brought up. None of the other state agencies have a somewhat autonomous board of directors, so to speak, over a lot of the major policy matters. And I understand that the governor would have authority over employee salaries and you know, purse things and things like that. But when we make a policy decision that has budgetary implications, that then the governor can adjust, eliminate, add to, whatever, I'm not sure how that dynamic works. And so why is that the case, I guess? Is there something in the statutes that say that's the case? Has this been tradition or what?
Mr. Vice Chair, this is Nate Pamplin. I'll try to take a stab at Commissioner McIsaac's question. I don't know the where it is in the governor's the legal framework. So I'll just speak to perhaps just at minimum tradition, and we can chase down the statutory requirements of this. But we have always have submitted our budget to the governor, and then the governor's office includes the budgets for other agencies such as state parks and DNR and for Fish and Wildlife. So those other entities that are not that are part of the executive branch of government, but report through a slightly different organizational framework, if you will. I would be starting to speculate on how it's set up within the Constitution and other parts of where the governor's, the requirements of the governor to submit a state operating budget, but I need to go back and do some homework, sir.
Okay, well, thank you. That might be a tough question. I'd like to follow up on it, but let me just ask, who in the governor's office said that 5% wasn't practical, or who might say 12% is not practical, or who might say 15% is the practical number?
Well, the way it works is within the governor's office, there's policy staff and budget staff. And so 2 weeks ago, we met with both. We met with the natural resource policy lead, the outdoor recreation policy lead, and two of OFM's budget staff. And so the budget staff are certainly on the lead for this, but I think that they seek counsel from the policy side. So I think we met with the four main folks that would be the authors of the governor's budget for our agency.
Okay, thanks. Well, I won't prolong it. I'm not trying to challenge authority. I'm trying to understand the authority, because it does seem that there's a difference between policy recommendations for legislation from this particular unique body compared to the rest. So thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
Any additional comments or questions? Well, it appears at this point we have a...
Larry, this is Commissioner Baker. I just want to make sure I know what we are voting on, if somebody could recap.
So my motion was to amend to have a 15% increase in fees across the board with a $7 fishing cap and $15 hunting cap. It doesn't speak to the COLA or administrative fee.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
Maybe just this is Nate, Vice Chair, and just one just to make sure as folks are considering voting. The wording on the caps is probably, and again, I know I stated this earlier, but I just want it to be very clear for you all and for the record. The wording on the caps will be something that the department will sort through and put in place in a bill by bundling certain licensed products. If, however, a customer buys products outside of the bundle, the cap would not be in effect. Further, the caps that are put out there right now at $7 and $15 are not out-the-door caps. applied to those. So just there's a couple other details there that the wording choice, I realize, is probably confusing, and I hope this editorial was helpful.
Before I call the question, go ahead.
Yeah, Commissioner McHarris, just a question of clarity on that. The maker of the motion said something about Mr. Graybill's out the door that was part of the motion, and it seemed to be contradicted by what was just said. So I'm back to the maker of the motion on intent.
I don't recall what you're referring to, Commissioner McIsaac. When I made the motion, I just asked to speak to it because others had suggested some revisions to what I have moved prior to the motion, and I just thought it would be good to have an opportunity to see what the calculations were, so I just asked for the calculations. In the event that somebody wanted to amend the amended motion.
Okay, so your motion is consistent with the staff's clarification then?
Absolutely.
Before I call for the question, I just want to be very brief and talk about the percentage. The public perception is important. I have my fingers on the pulse because of my business career of what people think a lot, at least the people I know well. And I think there's some very real concern and reluctance out there among particularly the recreational fishing community as it relates to what they perceive as paying more and getting less. Not to mention there are a whole bunch of potential changes upcoming that no one knows what the outcome of those are going to be. And I'm just going to state that I'm not going to make a motion, and I'm not going to vote against my colleagues, but I think 10% is a number that can make sense to the public, and that's where I am. So I guess we're going to hear back on what people think about what we do, and I think that's fair. So, okay, any other comments? Okay, I call for the question. All those in favor of Commissioner Thorburn's motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion carries. Thank you.
Hey, Larry, this is Bob. If there's no other business, I have to sign off. I've got a meeting coming up, so...
Yeah, I think we're fine, Commissioner Kehoe. Thank you for joining us. Have a good day, please.
Yeah, thank you.
Does someone else have a comment before I go to item C? Hearing none.
There was still presentation on the issue of the Chinook license plate that was brought up at the last meeting. So we're still on.
Well, I saw that on there, but I was the one that made that, and the feedback I got during the call last Friday was it's more trouble than it's worth. That's my words, not their words, but it's a big effort, a big lift. And so can we get a brief explanation of what your thoughts are, staff?
Certainly, Commissioner. So looking at page 15 and 16, in a nutshell, we have authority under current law to create a license plate. However, the revenue would be obligated to go towards steelhead. We could, of course, take existing resources of general flexible wildlife dollars that support steelhead and move it over to get the net effect to help out Chinook, so it's not a barrier. The downside is that on page 16, when we get actual revenue from the steelhead, it's $32,000.
I don't need your cable.
There's a lot of background noise.
Should I repeat?
Anybody have any questions? So, give me the short version. What's the general spin on it?
That we have the ability to do it today, and we expect it would raise about $60,000 a biennium. Based on current steelhead license plate sales. However, We've also heard from some people that the steelhead plate doesn't sell because it doesn't look like a fish. So we're not sure if we could sell more with the Chinook plate.
Well, I think there's a lot more.
I have a steelhead plate, and people are always stopping and saying, what is it?
Yeah. Well, no comment, Brad. We'll leave that be. I think there's, for obvious reasons, there's a lot of passion out there right now, a lot of interest, a concern about Chinook salmon in general, and the people that buy fishing licenses that fish for salmon are almost, I won't say totally based on Chinook opportunity, but that's the money fish in the recreational industry. So I'll leave it to my colleagues if they think it's worth pursuing. I think whatever the fee we would charge for it is important, and I'll just leave it open for discussion. Hearing none, I guess there's no